And we are back for the 106th, that's right, believe it or not, 106th installment at the Parish of the Patriots. If you're first time stopping by, I think you're in for a treat. Really like what we've got going here. And of course, as always, welcome to the return members of the congregation. We always like to start off with our listener supporter mailbag. We're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right into that. Of course, with the frozen tundra weather and all of that, it's kind of skinny this week, to be honest. But I think as the gears thaw out here this following week, maybe we'll see that uptick. If you want to be a part of that, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It's at the bottom. This is, by the way, if you're first time stopping by, we make this a very short thing here where I shill for shekels. At the bottom of the page, the description page, you can find that. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We got Monero. And if you have a weirdo cryptocurrency, you're welcome to drop me an email for that. Email address is down there as well. So let's jump right off into this. Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters, GPD. Hope this helps. Yes, it does. Believe me. It all every little bit helps. And from Patty, hey, Gramps, ties on the way. Just wondering, do you ever listen to podcasts when you're working? All the best. And I've always been famous for not listening to other people's show, not because there's not great work out there, but because there is great stuff out there. And I never want to, you know, unintentionally, it would be unintentional, but I never want to unintentionally plagiarize somebody's work. But that having been said, yes, on occasion, I'm in a position where I'm doing things and I can listen to some other shows. Obviously, I listen to what's here on Radio Albion, and that's honest goodness truth. I'm not just like, you know, shilling for the network here, but, you know, of course, the Daily Nationalist was Finn Longshanks and assorted others, including myself. We were discussing the Texas weather thing this past Friday. And anything with, I always try to catch Dr. Johnson's work when I have the opportunity to do so. And I was just thinking about what a really diverse lineup we have here on Radio Albion. I mean, I think it's really a neat thing. We have this show is unique. I'm proud of what we got with this show. What Sven does with the Daily Nationalist, it's a unique thing. And you have these all, you know, he's got a guest such as myself, co-hosts on certain days, which kind of spices up. You have Greatest Britons, which is British centric. If you're from Britain and you get to hear about historical people that are basically being erased from your history because you're not allowed to have a history anymore, like all of us. You know, and of course, Dr. Johnson's work, where you, for the most part, you can enjoy a college tier lecture education for free. And you know, you look at all these things and we're all doing a different thing, but kind of working towards a common, you know, common message of truth. And I think it's really neat. I think what Radio Albion has evolved into is just a really, really neat thing. I do. I think we have a really, really neat lineup and approach here what we're doing. And I'm just really proud to be a part of what we're doing here at Radio Albion. Like I say, yeah, that was it for the listener supporter mailbag. It is appreciated. And again, if you sent something and it's like, oh my gosh, he didn't get it. Well, you know, with the horrible winter weather, the post office is basically grinding to a halt, you know. I mean, obviously, if you're sending crypto, you know, unless you drop me a note, I can't say anything about you. So, you know, if you feel free to drop a note. But anyway, let's roll on here. I really don't have anything jotted down. We're going to completely, it's not really new, but we're going to completely fly by the seat of the pants. Usually a lot of times I'll think of things and jot them down, but I was kind of going to discuss, you know, the real situation here with the past week as, you know, why we had such a breakdown in the power grid here in Texas. But I wound up covering that on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sven. So if you didn't catch that, I think it's interesting as far as, you know, kind of a more in-depth look, because the media is doing their normal thing. They were doing their normal thing of giving you partial truths and, you know, facts, give you some facts without really painting the whole picture because they're trying to paint a narrative. So I think we did a pretty good job of kind of covering that and giving a little more insight as to what was actually going on here. But I had it jotted down to talk about that, and we wound up covering it on the Friday show. So, yeah, now we're just seat of the pants time, but that's okay. It's okay. And of course, as always, if you're new stopping by here, we do have a Christian-specific message, a sermon, if you would, and that'll be along later on in the show. Before that, we always just like to sit around and discuss these things. And speaking of which, I'm sitting here drinking my coffee, just clearing my mind out, getting ready to do the show. And I was thinking about how the United States and basically all Western governments seem to have one shared common trait, and that is that they hate their people. Is that controversial? Are we allowed to say, are we even allowed to criticize the government? No, it's a real question. You know, I mean, as they've been told, I've if you're like me, you raised your whole life, said, well, the difference in America, unlike a place like China, is you're allowed to criticize the government. But I'm not sure we're allowed to do that. Is that going to be, you know, an incitement if somebody else does something spectacular, like walk into the Capitol and walk around, take selfies, and then leave? Are you going to be, you know, tossed up on some sort of incitement thing? I don't know. I mean, we live in a stage where they still claim to represent us and that we have the freedom to criticize them, but they have a giant fence around the Capitol and the military on the ground to be sure that the people that they ostensibly represent can't get near them because that's our values or or whatever the case may be. But no, I was thinking about how Western governments have this one thing in common, is that they appear to hate their people. As an illustration of this, one of the things on the news was Biden is going to bring in, you know, even more immigrants, and he's going to work to take the illegal ones now and make them all legal. He's going to make all the illegal immigrants legal. He's going to bring in even more. And they don't even bother giving excuse. Remember that they used to actually say, well, we have to do this because, and they would come up with some lame ass excuse. You know, and for instance, when Germany and the rest of Western Europe decided to import the Middle East and Africa, they said, well, we have to do this because we have shrinking demographics. And so we can just bring people in from somewhere else. And there, now our demographics are fixed. Of course, the country's not the same. Then you had Hungary that was actually doing programs that were, you know, they would pay their native people to have more kids. It was a very simple program. Boo! Voila! You know, demographic problem fixed. But that's racist. It's replacing your people and displacing your own people in your country. That is a-okay. But if you work against that by any means besides importing other people to replace them, that is racist and evil. Now, they're not even giving us an excuse, though, for this anymore. We have huge unemployment now because they've destroyed they've been actively working to destroy the living standards of the people that are here with their doom flu lockdowns. You have massive unemployment. They're working on another stimulus bill because they admit that the people are broke because, you know, all the money is being strip mined and sent to billionaires, and yet they're importing more people. I mean, how does this make any sense? I mean, it doesn't, on its face, it doesn't make any sense except in the light of they hate the people that they supposedly claim to represent. I mean, they can't be claiming there's a labor shortage. We have huge unemployment. That used to be one of the excuses, by the way. Well, we have a labor shortage, and it would be the end of the world if big corporations and companies and such were forced to pay higher wages. So we have to import everybody else to keep those wages down. One of the things that really irks me is because I'm old enough to remember when they shipped all of the manufacturing jobs over to China. By the way, they did that. They basically had tax incentives to ship all of the manufacturing jobs to China. China did not sneak in here and steal the jobs in the middle of the night, regardless of what they want you to think. When they shipped all of that, I remember they all stood up there and said, oh, we're going to have, you're all going to get high-paying computer jobs. Never mind the fact that a guy who's perfectly capable to turn a wrench on an assembly line somewhere, but not capable of much else, but he could do that and support his family. He was never going to be able to do a computer job. But, they, you know, never setting that aside for the moment, they claimed they were going to help pay. They were going to pay for people to be retrained. Obviously, that never happened. The big corporations got their tax breaks to ship the jobs overseas, but the people never got the, paid retraining to become computer engineers. But some people managed to do that. They managed to get a job computer programming or whatever for Dell or whatever computer company. And what did they do? Well, they shipped what they could overseas to India and other places so that they wouldn't have to pay them. And the jobs they couldn't ship overseas, well, they just bring the Indians here. They bring the people from India here and they give them your job. And they just refuse to hire people. And then they go to the government and they say, oh, well, look here, it's all a charade. They all know what's going on. They're not being fooled. They're not tricking your politicians. They go to the government and they do this theater. Oh, we just can't hire anybody. We can't find anybody to work, you know, for 5 cents an hour. We need these H-1B visa people from India to come. Oh, well, that is horrible, Mr. Corporate Man. Checks this, make sure the check went into the bank. Oh, yes, we'll pass this to widen the visa program so you can import more people to replace the jobs for the native population. Now we have the doom flu lockdowns. They continue to they're just blatantly strip mining the economy. You're not supposed to notice these billionaires' wealth. You know, they already have more money than they were ever going to spend in their or their children or grandchildren's lifetimes. But never mind, still not enough. They've got to strip mine the rest out of the middle class, out of the economy. And I need to just say the middle class. They're strip mining it from the poor. They're strip mining it from the poor. They're strip mining it from the middle class. They're strip mining it from the upper middle class. They're strip mining it, hell, from everybody except them. It's got to go to the billionaires, got to go to the oligarchs. But yet, they're importing more people, and now they don't even feel a reason to tell us why. We're just supposed to, I guess it's another one of those things. It's our values, isn't it? They don't even bother telling us, well, why? Why is Biden going to raise the immigration rate however many multiple percentage? We don't even rate an excuse anymore. We don't even rate some sort of justification. We're just supposed to understand that's our values. Everybody's unemployed. Everybody's struggling. Everybody's trying to figure out what the hell's going on, how they're going to keep their business open, how they're going to keep their job because their place they work for can't seem to stay open. And yet they're going to import even more people. It's always been a matter of keeping the cost of labor down. That's always been one of the key things of immigration. And, you know, the real factor is it keeps wages depressed, keeps Wall Street up, keeps the profits up, keeps wages depressed. But now I don't think that's so much the factor anymore because so many people are unemployed. The wages are already depressed enough. Stagnant hell, they're going downhill. And yet they're doing it. Why? Because they hate the native population. They hate the people they supposedly represent. We look at Europe. Look at Europe. When Germany and the rest of Europe decided to import the Middle East and Africa. Yeah. Well, we have a demographics problem. At least they got an excuse, I guess. Never mind that Hungary just said, well, you know, we'll give tax breaks and credits and such and encourage our native population to have kids. How dare you? That's just so racist. You have to replace them with people from somewhere else. And we'll be accused of pointing this out, we'll be accused of hating the people coming from somewhere else. Well, they didn't get here by magic. They were brought here. I mean, you know, people all over the Middle East and Africa didn't wake up one day and say, hey, let's go to Europe. Okay. How do we get there? Let's just by magic, we'll suddenly be there walking around across their borders. They were brought there. I mean, don't buy into the scam. You just hate those people. Well, why? Not really. I mean, it does. I'm pointing out the fact that they were brought here for a reason, obviously, to replace the native population. Well, why would they do that? Because apparently they hate the native population and they want to replace them with somebody else. And of course, as much as they love to talk about the democracy, nobody voted on this. If we had real democracy, the people would say, hey, we're going to import the third world and we're going to replace y'all with these guys. Y'all okay with that? Let's have a vote. No, nobody got that. Because you have this representative thing. I still can just, when people, we have a representative republic. And of course, we talked about this last week. I'm not going to beat this horse to death. But again, they represent the oligarchs. They're the face of it. They're like the middlemen. You know, the oligarchs, that's what they want. They, you know, and the politicians do their bidding. Of course, now, you know, and then when the people don't like it, the politician's job is to take the heat for it. It's a nice little system until you're having to put up fences and military on the ground to keep the people away from the middlemen. It's a definite, I would call that a definite sign that the whole system is starting to break down just a tad little bit. Oh, I better watch out. You know, I'm not even sure where, you know, the lines, the rules keep getting blurred so much now. Are we even allowed to criticize politicians and the government anymore? If some random people somewhere that have no idea who they are go in and walk around the Capitol and take selfies and then leave, you know, is that going to make us guilty of inciting them to do so? Because we pointed out that by, you know, just a casual glance, you can see that they hate us. They hate the people they claim to represent. I don't know. The lines keep getting blurred. Having to pass trillions of dollars worth of stimulus money to throw the people $1,400. We're not going to be told where the rest of the money's going. They I love how they try to frame that. You know, they say, oh, this Biden's COVID relief plan is going to cost this many trillions of dollars. And then you have, you know, the Republicans playing their role. Oh, my gosh, we can't afford that. But the whole narrative that they all work together is that you're supposed to have the impression that all of that money is going to the people. Like that $1,400 you're going to get, that adds up to that many trillions of dollars, and that's absolute horseshit. It does not add up to that. And they're not going to tell us where the rest of that money is going. Just to argue about whether or not we can afford it. See, the Republicans are filling in their role to act like they're the Scrooges that don't want you to get the breadcrumbs from the table. And the Team D is, we just want to help the people. But the real, they're never going to tell us where's the rest of the money going. But of course, nobody asks the big question. If the economy's so bad, and it is, because again, they're strip mining the money for the oligarchs, then why are they bringing even more people here? I mean, this is just makes a complete, it's a complete logical contradiction here. It doesn't make any sense on its face. The people are so broke, the economy's suffering so bad because of the worst virus that's ever been ever been known to man, apparently. The economy is so bad that they're having to spend trillions of dollars to keep people from starving to death, but they're going to bring even more people in. Well, what are those people supposed to do when they get here? I mean, we have huge unemployment. What are these people supposed to do? I guess they're going to have to get some relief, too. They're going to come here to get relief because things are so bad. Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. Except that they hate the people that they represent. They figure they'd be better off with some other people. We're just going to bring these other people in and replace the native population. Now you look at nations such as Russia and China. Do I think that their governments love their people and want to take care of them? No, I you know, they're just rulers that want to keep ruling. But they at least don't hate their native population. You've got to give them that. And in contrast to what we have in the West, that seems just like this weird, like situation. You know, they must love their people. Well, no, they don't. But they don't hate them. They don't actively work to, like, replace and destroy them. So, and compared to the system we have in the West, it's like this upside down world. What are they doing over there? They're actually working to make their populations, you know, a little wealthier, make their lives a little better. They must love them. Well, no, they just figure their power will be even more secure if, you know, if their populations are happy, which is the way things have always worked, because their government isn't run with a middleman. Their government is pretty upfront. They're, you know, for the most part, calling the shots. I mean, yeah, every system is corrupt on a certain level. We're not going to nitpick on that. But for the most part, you know, the government is running things. We're here in the West, here in the U.S., we have this middleman system where the government is just the middleman. The oligarchs are running it. The politicians and the government are just the middleman between the oligarchs and the people. They're just the ones there to take the heat. When the government is the ones actually running everything, then yeah, they're going to do things to kind of, you know, I mean, a good stable society and the people feel like they're doing pretty good for themselves and they have some hope for the future. That's going to be a stable society and you're going to hold on to your power. When you have this system where you have the oligarchs running things and then a bunch of middlemen, to take the heat for it, then they just do whatever. And you look at, you know, these politicians, the government are doing these things that just make, you know, cause up this, it basically breeds instability. And on his face, it looks like it doesn't make any sense. And yet it does. It does when you consider that they're not really the ones in charge. You look at a government like the governments in these other countries, such as, again, Russia and China and others. And the government's actually in charge and it's to their own benefit to, you know, for the people to feel good or at least have some hope for the future. Here they don't feel that. They just hate the population and want to do everything they can, apparently, to grind them to dust. It's like for those of us who have been live long enough, it's like the whole world is flipped upside down. It's like we're living in bizarro world where everything is just all of a sudden. Everything has gone backwards. Or at this point now, you know, when I hear people going on point over here, look at China, I just turn it off. I just shut that out because they're either just very ignorant, and that's not an insult. They just don't understand. They're just very ignorant of how everything works and how all of this is working. Or they're shills. They're working to actively keep people distracted. It was really not a complicated situation. Look over there. Look over there. Look over there. Look what they're doing over there on the other side of the planet that actually has nothing to do with you. Look at that. Oh, my gosh. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's horrible. Whatever you do, don't look here. Don't look at what's happening here. I think you're talking about optics. My breath is taken away almost at the horrible optics of the fact that this supposedly representative government has a giant fence around it and the military on the ground to keep you away from the people that they claim represent you. All while spouting about the democracy that you don't ever actually seem to get a vote in. And it's funny when you talk to people IRL, and I hope you do, and you just listen to them. Don't try to get like monologuing. And it's a hard thing for me because I monologue on this show. Whenever I do a show with somebody else, like when I do the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sven, or we had the fairly rare pleasure of doing a Radio Albion roundtable with Sven, Dr. Johnson, and myself, you know, I always have to take a mental note not to monologue, you know, because it's habit. I monologue on this show. You have no idea how difficult it is, how you have to train your mind to be able to sit here and just talk for an hour plus about things. It's harder than you think it is. But anyway, getting back on point, when you talk to people IRL, and I hope you do, you know, try not to monologue. Try not to just sit there and pound the table and yell at them or whatever. You just try to beat it into their heads and make them understand. Listen to them. Listen to them. I was listening to somebody IRL the other day, and you know, they're doing their best to understand. They're, you know, not, they haven't got a good grasp of it, like those of us who, you know, have been at this for a minute, that we get it, you know. And they were talking about all of this, and they were just like, basically, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Why is it? Why are they doing that? Why is this not making sense? How come they're doing this? How come they're doing that? And I finally just looked at them and I said, it's a feature. It's not a bug. You know, the system, you understand, this isn't a breakdown of the system. The system is operating as designed. Now, this isn't like, oh, there's something wrong with the system. The system's doing what it's supposed to do. It's just now they've cranked it up. You know, it was running like at half throttle before, and now they're redlining it. They've got it full throttle. It's redlined, and, you know, smoke is starting to come out of it, and it's getting harder and harder for your average person to not notice. People that are still under the illusion that somehow the government is supposed to represent them, and why are they not? It doesn't make any sense to them. But the system is working as designed because your politicians don't work for you. They don't even run the country. They don't run the country. The oligarchs run the country. And the truth is, it's been that way for a while. It's just that now they've got the machine cranked up to the point that it's pretty obvious. I was reading a little article yesterday. I just kind of skimmed through it, but I was reading a little article, and it was about the F-14. It was about the F-14 fighter jet, you know, from the Top Gun movies, you know, and basically how it was just always pretty much a complete piece of shit. You know, I mean, you had this Hollywood version, and oh my gosh, you know, of course that was the original Top Gun. It was back during the Cold War and such, and you know, the Ruskies and all of them. I better look out. And it was essentially a piece of shit. It was a typical, you know, cost overrun military industrial complex. They got rich off of making this piece of shit, but it was a piece of shit nonetheless. And one of the key cornerstone weapons that this aircraft carried was the Phoenix missile system. This was the top of the line, cutting edge of American technology missile system, anti-aircraft missile system. You launch this thing, and they said to launch one cost $500,000 to launch one missile. $500,000. That's how much it costs to make one. And they would drop this thing and take off super fast. And it would sail up like 80,000 feet, expend most of its fuel, and then come down and just like dive bomb onto the other aircraft, hitting it and destroying it. And they ran a test, and they put these unmanned planes up there and some drones flying in a circle or whatever the hell, and fired at them, and it worked like a champ. It worked like a champ. It hit like 4 out of 5, and the fifth one that it missed, it detonated close enough, they said, it would have destroyed any target. Look at here. It cost $500,000 to launch one, but look how successful. Look how successful it was, except that it wasn't. It turns out, like during, like, I think it was the first Desert Storm, the first war against Iraq, what people, what the people these were being fired at, they fired them. They would fire them. And everybody had already figured out that, well, they fired this thing off. It climbs up at this speed, but it's running out of fuel to do that. So all you had to do was turn your airplane around and fly away. Fly away from it. And it would run out of fuel and never be able to, never be able to dive bomb down on you. Awesome. How much money was spent on that? How many billions did the corporations rake in on that for something that was utterly and completely useless? And, you know, this is just a single example, but I was thinking about the fact how they're like pushing, and they're openly saying now that we can win nuclear war. You know, this notion that nuclear war, because I was always raised up during the Cold War and everything, we were told over and over again that, you know, nuclear deterrence, because neither side is going to win a nuclear war. You just nuke each other. Everybody's dead. Nobody gains anything from that. Right. And now we have these lunatics. They're openly saying that, you know, hey, we can win nuclear war. It's okay. In fact, we could first strike, nuke another country, and everything will be all right because they can't do anything to us. Of course, again, if you put this in the context of they hate the native population, they don't really give a shit if you get nuked or not. They're going to be nice and cozy in their little bunker somewhere. Probably not even in the country. Some of the middlemen might get nuked. Too bad, Mr. Politician. You know, your shelf life has ended, I suppose. But they're openly talking now. People in authority openly talking about nuclear war is winnable. Well, why? Because they say we have these wonderful anti-missile technology now. This wonderful anti-missile technology. We've tested it. And I've read articles where they talk about, because, of course, all the media does is repeat what they're told. They don't do any actual journalism. And they talk about, we ran these tests. And when I read this about the Phoenix missile system, you know, and they ran the tests, and boy, look how good it is. But in actual combat, everybody knew you just flew the other direction and ran out of fuel. Couldn't hit you. Couldn't hit you. It was an utter failure. Spent who knows how many, probably trillions of dollars before it was all done, adjusted for inflation. And I think, yet, you know, it really, I guess, you know, it wasn't a huge thing as far as, you know, I mean, how many pilots lost their lives because of this boondoggle? How many people got killed because of this, you know, anti-air missile, air-to-air missile thing that was a complete boondoggle? Well, not many, if any. But yet they're using that same line. We've run tests. Look at here. We ran tests. We intercepted these missiles and shot them out of the sky. You see, nuclear war is nothing to fear because they can't ever hit us. But those are nice controlled tests. The enemy's not going to sit there and fly their missile in a nice, perfect, straight line trajectory so that you can home in on it and have a successful test so you get your trillion-dollar contract for your anti-missile technology. It's the same lie, only on a much larger scale. They're trying to sell people on the notion that nuclear war is winnable because they know they can't win a conventional war. Don't kid yourself. This notion that the U.S. military is this most advanced. No, it's the most expensive military on the face of the planet. That's for sure. But it's not the most capable. They have some high-tech wizardry gadgets, but most of that, like the Phoenix missile system, it's just a cost overrun boondoggle that has enriched the corporations. The idea is they'll never actually have to use it, and so who's going to ever know? Right? But now that they're talking about, oh, we can win nuclear war because we can shoot down their missiles before you ever get nuked. Don't worry about it. Now there's a whole lot more on the table. They're talking about nuclear war. They're actually openly putting that on the table. Because, again, they know they can't win a conventional war. The idea that this military is going to, what, roll into Russia, roll across. They ought to double down and do it in the wintertime. Hell, that'll be even better. That'd be even more lulz, except for the guys getting killed over it. I mean, really, does anybody really think they're going to do that? Is the, you know, what, they're going to sail the Navy over there and take out China? Because that's what they'd have to do. Have to use the Navy to go launch strikes on China. No. I mean, it's one thing to sail the Navy over there and take on a country that their Navy consists of basically fishing boats. You know, they use boats. There's a poor country over there and their Navy consists of what people over here, you know, fish for bass and catfish on, you know, except they've got like a gun mounted up there instead of a trolling motor. And one thing to sail the Navy over there and kick their ass. They're not going to do that, China. Come on now. They know they cannot win a conventional war. And for some reason, they seemed bound and determined, or at least keep everybody looking in that direction. So they're putting nukes on the table because they know that these other countries know that they can't win. It's a bluff. And I will flex the might of the U.S. military. And these other countries are like, you're going to get your ass kicked. You're talking about writing checks that we all know you can't cash. So they're having to throw nukes on the table. Oh, and by the way, we're not afraid to nuke your ass either. Make no mistake, don't believe into the hype. Oh, we did tests in our anti-missile technology. They'll never hit us. If you believe that, you know, I don't even know what to tell you. Because the notion that a controlled test equals real life. Remember the Patriot missile system? The Patriot. That was the thing back in the 90s. That was the early version of these anti-missile systems. The Patriots. And all old Saddam had was them old cheap-ass Scud missiles. They were just basically like lobbing it over there. There was no real control. I mean, they were very primitive missile, Saddam's Scuds. But we had our cutting-edge Patriot missile system, and it still couldn't knock them down. I mean, it knocked some down, but not all of them. You had this basic missile that basically launched off in a certain direction, and pretty much when it ran out of fuel, it landed on where more or less in the area of what they were shooting at. And we had this cutting edge, the Patriot missile system and anti-missile system. And yeah, it really didn't work worth a shit. No. But yet, nukes are on the table now because don't worry, we've really improved on that. Look how many trillions of dollars we spent on it. It must be good, right? Now, it could be tempting to blow this off and say, well, they just know it. They're just bluffing. They know it won't ever come to that. But it's a little more concerning when, again, you consider the fact that the observable reality is those who run the Western countries, the United States, Western Europe, they hate their populations. So since we know by observable reality, by the evidence that we look at here, that they obviously hate the native population, would they really give a shit if you got nuked? Yeah, that's a real question. Would they care if you got nuked? Imagine, you know, some city in flyover country gets nuked. And then what? The people are outraged. What are you going to do? Vote for somebody else? Go march on the Capitol where they've already established a huge fence and they have the military on the ground? The military's on the ground. Yeah, you got a gun there for a reason. They got a guns because they're telling you they will shoot you if you try to come in there. That's why you don't put the military out there with guns for no reason. You are sending a clear message. We've got this fence. You stay out. If you try to come in, we will shoot and kill you. That is what they are saying. I mean, what other message is there? They're not there for table decoration. They're not there for what? Decor. It makes it look so much more colorful and vibrant, having all of these people in camouflage. Isn't that silly, too? Camouflage. They wear their camouflage fatigues in the city. Yes, you're blending right in there. You look like a bush in the middle of the street. It's just a random funny thing. But they have a huge fence, the military on the ground to keep you out. Your little city, your city in flyover country gets nuked. That's just really, really too bad. Sorry. Sorry for you. We're over here in the Caribbean in our bunker because we're, you know, the oligarchs and we're rich. Too bad about your city got nuked, but that's the price you pay for the democracy and our values. On the bright side, you didn't get the COVID. You didn't get the flu. Nuclear weapons eradicate the COVID. Maybe that's how they would try to sell it. Hey, yeah, your city's got nuked and all, and that sucks, but good news. Scientists have discovered that radiation and a nuclear blast actually eradicates COVID. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you got nuked, but it's actually a lower death toll because, you see, so many people were going to die from the deadly Doom virus that with the nukes wiping out the Doom virus, lives are being saved by you being nuked. And I say that, and I know it's absurd to say it, but yet I can actually picture them saying that. We wiped out the Doom virus. It was science has discovered, and we have to follow the science. We get Anthony Fauci on there. It's really great that everybody's been nuked because this has actually tamped down the violence. I remember last summer when they were having all the BLM and Tifa riots and burning the bitch down, and there all these people out in the streets, none of them social distancing and wearing a mask or being locked down. And I remember reading an article where the scientists said that this actually lowers the Doom virus. You see, even though they're not wearing the mask or the social distancing, but they literally said that because people were afraid to go out because these people were burning the city down, the people that there were more people staying in their homes in lockdown because they were afraid to go outside, that it was actually curtailing the Doom virus. It was actually helping stop spread the Doom virus that rioters were going down and burning cities down. They actually said this. I read this in a real serious, straight up news article at the time. Not a real stretch then to imagine them saying the nuclear blast and radiation is effective to curtail the Doom virus. It's okay. Yes, a bunch of y'all got incinerated, but that's the price you have to pay to stay safe from the flu. Is any narrative too absurd anymore? It's like the world is upside down. You're old enough, you like me. It is. It's like the world is upside down. Back in the 80s, 90s, even 70s, 80s, 90s, the supposed left in this country was always about we need to get rid of nuclear weapons, even if it means we unilaterally get rid of all of our nuclear weapons. We got to get rid of all of our nuclear weapons because nobody wins. Nobody wins. Now you just picture what passes as the left today proclaiming nukes are great. In fact, if this country gets nuked, it'll be good because it'll end the racism, the sexism, and the misogyny and the transphobia or whatever the hell else is the cause of the day. You see, the only way we can end whiteness, which is what they openly call for now, this is in open publications, end whiteness, we have to nuke it. It's the only way to end systematic racism is just to nuke it, just to get it nuked. It'll end there. You know, what the hell? It's like the world has flipped upside down. It's like the lunatics are in charge now. But no, the system is working as designed. It's just now it's in overdrive. They're not pretending. Not pretending anymore. So the media used to pretend. They used to at least pretend. I don't even have to stretch my imagination to picture network news with their reporter with the big mushroom cloud way in the distant background talking about how this is a good thing because it's going to end coronavirus and racism once and for all. You shouldn't be upset about this. You should be celebrating it because this is how we get to true progress. Then don't worry about all those people that were nuked and killed because we'll just import some more people, right? Hell, maybe that's going to be part of the long-term plan. We'll just, a bunch of population will get nuked, but that's okay. There's lots of people in Africa and the Middle East. We'll just bring them here. There. Ah, joke's on you. You thought you wiped out a bunch of our population. We just replace them with other people. Sound absurd? But as we look at it, is it really absurd? Nuke racism. I don't think it's a stretch of the imagination to picture them actually saying this. And of course, what? You people are going to run around and point out, yes, but look how many black people died in the nuclear blast as well. Well, that's okay. Africa's full of blacks. They'll just bring more in to replace them. But don't worry, they care. They really, really care. They hate you. They really hate the people that they supposedly rule over. It's contemptuous. It's not enough to strip mine the economy. It's not enough to strip mine what wealth is, what little bit of wealth is left. It's not, and they're not even letting people have the breadcrumbs off the table anymore. If like you were the dog waiting for some crumbs to fall off the table, they're kicking the dog and you know, they're full, they're fat. And gluttonous. They've been sitting there stuffing their face and they're huge and fat and gluttonous. And oh my gosh, a breadcrumb, a crumb, a piece of meat fell off the table. And the dog, it's over there starving, poor little dog, over there trying to get it. And they're kicking the dog. They're kicking the dog and picking that up. Picking that up off the table. You don't get that. It's mine. It's utter open contempt. How else can, I mean, really, how is there another way to look at this? Because if there is, I'm game. I would like to see another take on it. There's no other way to look at it. They're openly contemptuous for the people they rule over. It's absolutely the worst system. It's the worst system of ruling. You know, I mean, really, if you had a king, if you were ruled over by a monarchy and you had the most despotic shithead of a king, you could at least say, well, this asshole be dead in a few years. You know, I mean, his life will run out and then maybe the next guy will be better. You look at histories of monarchies, it tend to work like that. You would get a king who was a real asshole, corrupt piece of shit. But I mean, then he would die. And oftentimes the next guy that came along was, you know, a whole lot better, you know, or at least in comparison to him. This system, it just keeps going. You know, it just keeps going on and on, perpetually getting worse and worse. I mean, was the system set up by the founding fathers of the United States, you know, bad? No. I mean, you know, what they set up, but we're so far away from that now, it's morphed into, and people sit there and say, but the founding fathers, that has nothing to do with the system you have now. Sitting here and arguing about what the founding fathers set up is just mental masturbation. It doesn't have anything to do. What we have to deal with, what we have to live under, is the system we've got. We're not living in 1800. We're not living in 1776. This is now. This is now. This is the system that we have. Sitting there and having some argument about, oh, we're the founding fathers, that's irrelevant. Straight up, that is absolutely 100% irrelevant to the system we live under now. This is what we've got. We don't anymore live under the system that the founding fathers established than we live under National Socialism as it was in Germany in the 30s. It's nothing. It is not that system. So it's irrelevant to sit here and argue about what the founders set up, but that's irrelevant. That's not the system we live under. This is the system we live under. And this is the reality we live under. It's amazing to me. You know, I talked at the beginning of the show, like, you know, the few podcasts I listen to when I have a chance to do so. You know, I like to listen to Dr. Johnson's podcasts. They're very intellectual. They're very, like I say, it's like sitting through a college lecture. And yeah, I'm not an intellectual. I don't consider myself an intellectual. I don't have any delusions of that. I'm a regular guy with the rare attribute of common sense, the ever more rare attribute of looking at these things with common sense. Because they try to dress these things up and make them, you know, seem really, really complicated, but they're not. You strip it all away with common sense and look at it, and it is what they appear to be. You know, I mean, it just, when you strip away all of the stuff they kind of camouflage it with, it's pretty obvious. But you listen, you know, say someone like Dr. Johnson, very intellectual, and you realize how unintellectual, you know, people in general are. People want to get bogged down in, you know, these topics about, you know, such as, you know, well, the founding fathers and what they established, but that's not the reality of what we live in, you know? Well, if we had this system of government, but we don't. We don't have this system of government, whatever that may be. We don't live under a monarchy. We don't live under National Socialism. We don't live under what the founding fathers set up. I mean, that's just not reality. And what's the point of sitting here talking about, well, yes, but we're going to establish. No, no, we're not. I mean, not unless something changes. Yeah, I mean, you know, the first steps, you got to realize your situation. You got to realize, you know, I mean, if you were in a car wreck, and your car crashed to the bottom of a ravine, and you wake up and you know, you're just laying in the middle of this smoking rubble that was once your car, and nobody saw you crash off the ravine. There's no sign of any rescue coming. What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to take inventory of your situation. You're going to look around and be like, okay, wait, where am I? Where am I? What? Okay, I'm in smoking wreckage. What happened here? Oh, that's right. I was driving along. I hit a patch of ice. And I hit that guardrail, and I flipped up in the air. And then I came to, and I'm down at this bottom of the ravine. You know, the first thing you have to do is figure out the situation that you're in. Okay, now what? Well, first thing I have to do is get out of this wreckage. I have to see if I can cut my seatbelt. Is there enough room between the steering wheel and the windshield to crawl out of this wreckage? I got to get out of this wreckage. Then once you get out of the wreckage, am I able to climb back up and wave for help? If not, what am I going to do? Well, I need shelter, food, and water. It's always the first three things you need. You start taking this inventory. And then lay there in the wreckage and be like, man, I wish I was home. Man, when I left the house this morning, it was nice. It was cozy. I wish I was home. I wish I was still back at home. Last month, I was on vacation. I was on a beach somewhere. I wish I was on vacation. Imagine being on a beach somewhere. You're going to freeze to death. Your dumb ass is going to die in the wreckage because you're laying there thinking about what you were doing last month. not the reality. You got to figure out where the hell you're at before you're ever going to figure out how you're going to start crawling out of the wreckage. That's how it works. Getting caught up into where the founding fathers established. That's like being on vacation last month. It's irrelevant. You're in a car wreck now. Ain't nobody coming unless you figure something out. Shows such as this and others that we do here on Radio Albion is at least about making people understand, take inventory of the situation, and at least understand where you're at. I don't have the answer. I don't know how to tell you to fix this. I think it's going to, as far as this system, I think it's bound to implode on itself. I think it's coming apart now. I think people in other countries, I think Putin understands that this thing is falling apart. The societal collapse is happening, and they just keep doubling down and making it worse. But I don't have the answers for you. How do we change to a different system? What kind of system do we? I don't have those answers for you. I'm at least just trying to get people to realize they've been in wreck and they're not back on the beach last month on vacation. And you realize that and you're like, well, that's a waste of time because I realize, well, you're not everybody else. Because most people are still sitting around closing their eyes thinking that the doom virus lockdowns are going to end someday. If they just go get the shot, then they're going to stop this nonsense. They're going to stop this insanity when there's obviously no chance that they're going to do that. They won't accept the fact. They won't accept the reality that they're laying in the bottom of a ravine in a wreck. They're still sitting there closing their eyes going, thinking, oh, I'm on the beach. I'm still back on the beach. This is a bad dream. They're going to end the lockdowns. Once we get the virus, or once we get the vaccine against the deadly virus, even though they're already saying, well, we've got new variants now, and we can't lift a lot of restrictions until, 80% of the entire world's population has been vaccinated. And then we got these other variants. It's never going to end. But most people are still, they're just closing their eyes. And they're imagining they're on vacation at the beach. Everything has gone back to normal. They don't want to accept the reality that they're laying in the wreckage. I'm sitting there with my hands over my eyes as if to illustrate. It's like, look around. It's like, who the hell is even looking at this? But anyway, that's what we do. I don't have the answers, folks. People sit there occasionally and send me nasty emails like, oh, that's all fine and dandy, but what are you going to do? What's the answer? I don't have your damn answers. I mean, it's great you do if you do realize you're in the wreckage. But, again, like I say, at some point in time, you got to kind of take inventory of that. And what can you do to better your position? I'm not the guy in the helicopter with the little basket that's going to lower it down and pull you up out of it. I'm sorry, I'm just not. But at least somebody is trying to point out the reality of the situation. Because everything is just this absurd lie now, and people have got to understand the reality and where they're at and that this system is functioning as it's currently designed. It is. It's functioning as it's currently designed. And to expect it to suddenly do something different all on its own, well, that is just utter insanity. We got to wrap up that part of the show. Got to get into our Christian-specific message this week. I know you've been looking forward to it. I've always looked forward to it. So you know what to do. And if you don't, like you're a first-time listener, well, this is what you do. You get in here and fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon, as it were. Here at the Parish of the Patriots. This is always a good place, by the way, because this is what I do. I pause recording. If you're listening, you pause your listening. Go get your fresh cup of coffee. Get settled back in. Clear your mind out. That's right. Get on in here. We're going to get this week's Christian-specific message going. So as you get settled in this week, we're going to just jump right in. Go ahead and jump right into our scripture reading this week. We're doing the book of Isaiah. We're going to do several verses from the book of Isaiah. And no, it's not that I think Isaiah was talking about us today, but as we've talked about many times before, the Lord's judgment is cyclical. I mean, we feel like these are unprecedented times and stuff, but really a lot of it's not. And it's reasonable to assume that God's judgment kind of works in the same way. I've talked before about if you go through your Old Testament and the stories, of the stories of how God's judgment came down and the reasons why, and you took those and made a checklist of, okay, if you wanted to bring around God's judgment against a nation, against a country, you would do these things. And how our current situation is, basically all of the nations of the West or checking all of the boxes off. You know, it's like just daring, daring God's judgment. So, but if you do these certain things, I mean, it's laid out here very clear. If you do these certain things as a nation, you will bring about God's judgment. And yet, it's cyclical. People still do them. I mean, you have it outlined here. It's like, don't push the red button. And yet, eventually, people push the red button. If you put this certain code into the keypad, your house is going to blow up. And yet, there's people who sit there eventually, and they'll punch it in, you know, just because. I don't know. It's just the insanity of human nature. So let's read some of this. We're going to be in the book of Isaiah, chapter 5. We're going to start with verses 11 through, I think, about 16. Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that continue until night, till wine inflame them. And the harp, and the viol, and the tabret, and the pipe, and wine are in their feasts. But they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of his hands. Here he's talking about this gluttonous. They're filled with wealth. They're not having to go out and work. They get up in the morning to just start the party. They don't consider the ways of the Lord because they're fat, because they're living in such prosperity that they're just so gluttonous. They're able to live in prosperity. They don't consider the ways of the Lord. They spend their time nothing but just wallowing in their prosperity. Continuing on, therefore, my people have gone into captivity because they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with thirst. Therefore, hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure, and their glory, and their multitude, and their pomp, and he that rejoiceth shall descend into it. And the man and the mean man shall be brought down, and the mighty man shall be humbled, and the eyes of the lofty shall be humbled. But the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in judgment, and God that is holy shall be sanctified in righteousness. All of this wealth, all of this, you know, you look at how I've often pointed out how you look at these very wealthy, powerful people. You know, I mean, you don't have to look very far. They're always in the media. You look at them and they're very wealthy, the oligarchs, and they're very powerful. But death will come for them. And you look at how they fight against death. You know, you hear these stories about they take, you know, like infant blood and have transfusions with them and stuff. And I can believe that because they truly fear death. They believe their wealth and their power will somehow protect them from the grave. Ultimately, they also believe their wealth and power will somehow protect them from God's judgment. Yet it's spelled out here quite clearly that such is not the case. All of their wealth, all of their pomp, all of their material things, all of their power mean nothing. Hell is going to open up and suck them right in. That is how God's judgment works. That which they have put their faith in, they say, well, I don't need to worry about the Lord. I don't need to worry about any of this. That's for the poor people. I've got my wealth. My money is my God. Who can touch? I've got all of this power. And yet, all of that stuff will be sucked right in. Now, at the end of this, but the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in judgment, shall be exalted in judgment, and God that is holy shall be sanctified in righteousness. You see, God will be glorified. We did a deal several weeks back, and we talked about the story of Gideon. It was a real popular one. I got a lot of popular feedback on that. And of course, you come away, you realize that we talked about it at the time, that, you know, God set up like this nearly impossible circumstance so that the people of Israel couldn't take credit for it. You know, they couldn't take credit for it. He made it basically where, like, when the victory was theirs, they couldn't say, yeah, we did that. We kicked their ass, didn't we? No, you know, it was set up in a way where it was just nonsensical. And God, you know, so that it would be nonsensical to somehow take credit for having done it. It was obvious that God did it. He made it clear that God did it. And I was thinking about, if you flip it around, look at it from the other side. You see, God was glorified in the people of Gideon, you know, in Gideon's people, in the army, in the people of Israel's sight. He was glorified because this victory had been given to them from God. They couldn't take credit for it. He had made it to where, you know, it was so ridiculous that they won this battle by, you know, banging on stuff and waving lanterns around, that they couldn't take credit for it. And this God was glorified. But what about the vanquished? What about those who lost? What about those who fell into madness and were cut down? What about the peoples that they marched for? What about those nations? See, also the vanquished know that this was the work of the Lord. You see, in this, God's righteousness is lofted up, because sure, I mean, the people that got the victory, they're like, wow, only God could have done that. Glory to God. Likewise, those on the receiving end of the judgment of God in this display, also, at the end of the day, made grudgingly, they had to admit that this was the work of God. They sent out this mighty army, and their mighty army was slaughtered. They killed each other, and they fled. And this could only be the work of the Lord. You see, even to the wicked, God's judgment, it's a slap in the face. It's a punch in the gut, as it were. But it is, God's righteousness is glorified. And again, the credit goes to the Lord. Now, this is a skip forward. We're going to stay in chapter 5. We're going to do verses 20 through 24. More woes. We got more woes to cover here. Woe unto them. And these will really ring true for this clown world we live in today, because they're all about projection. They're all about distortion. They're all about distorting the truth. They're all about lies. We live in this clown world society founded on lies. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. If Isaiah were around talking today, you'd hear this and say, yeah, he's obviously talking about clown world, right? But this wasn't about clown world. It was about the society that was collapsing around them at that time. The corruption had reached such a point that, just like our clown world today, they call good evil and evil good. They call the truth hate, don't they? You speak the truth and that's hatred. They sit there and they spew lies, and they claim that is love, and they claim their lies are the truth. No matter how absurd. In fact, the more absurd they are, the more they demand that this is the truth. They take lightness. They take darkness. They put dark, as it says here, that they put darkness for light and light for darkness. They call the dark light. Everything is backwards. I said earlier, it's like backwards, upside down, bizarro world, because everything is about lies. They call the truth a lie. I mean, look at this election nonsense. You have all these videos of them throwing the observers out, putting boards up on the windows so that nobody can see them counting the votes. It's a common sense tells you, well, they were doing something pretty shady in there. And what did they say? There's no evidence. There's no evidence of voter fraud. What do you mean voter fraud? There's no evidence of voter fraud. Well, it's just a conspiracy theory that's been totally debunked. Does this make sense to you now? They call light darkness, dark light, darkness light. Everything is inverted. You get this inversion. When Satan's influence reaches a certain critical mass, everything becomes inverted. Because why? Jesus tells us he is the father of lies. There is no truth in him. That's how you know you've got this. Satan's power has reached like a critical mass in your failing, corrupt, crumbling society. There's no truth in him. That's why you get this pervasion of lies. It is clearly reflected here. We've had it spelled out in the manual for us. It's been done before. We all act like everything's brand new. Well, some of the technology is new, yes, but these human patterns, this pattern of this world, is nothing new. It's nothing new. It's all spelled out. Here's the checklist. Oh, look, our society checks off all the boxes. I wonder what's coming next. But in their arrogance, in their haughtiness, in their pure hubris, they're like, God's not going to do anything. God, it's just a bunch of ancient stuff in an obsolete book. They elevate themselves as gods. Nobody can touch us, our wealth and our power. And hell will open up and suck them right in because God said it. Their arrogance and their hubris. God's not going to do anything. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. But we're not lacking on experts these days, are we? We've got to trust the science. What does the science say? Let me check the narrative. Which scientists did we pay? Oh, they're wise. Look at these wise men they present to us. Look at Anthony Fauci. He's a bumbling idiot. He just spews whatever he's told to spew. When he was told to say masks don't do anything, he said masks don't do anything. When he was told to go out there and proclaim that you need to wear 3 masks, I guess. Are we up to 2? I know we're up to 2 masks. I think we're working up to 3 masks and probably a face shield. But this is the voice of wisdom, the science. They're wise in their own sight. We have science. We don't need your obsolete old book. We don't need the word of God. We are our own gods. We have these new gods. We have these high priests, the science. And dare you not be a heretic to our religion. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine, and men of strength to mingle strong drink. Which justify, and this gets to it here, which justify the wicked for reward, and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. You think taking the ticket, as we call it, is a new thing? They took a ticket. You look at somebody, he's obviously a shill, and he gets to be on TV and all of these things. He's like, man, that guy took the ticket. Wonder what they got on him. This isn't anything new, which justify the wicked for reward. The more wicked, look at these people. Look at these people they promote and tell us that we should look up to, that they hold up. They even call them idols. They hold them up as the pinnacle of society, which you should all strive for. The more wicked, the more corrupt they are, the more they're celebrated. Why do rumors, these, as they call them, debunk conspiracies, though nobody's actually debunked them? But why do you think these accusations, all of these people in power are secret pedophiles? How does a quote-unquote conspiracy theory such as that, and I guess you would have to say it is a theory, we haven't necessarily seen any hard evidence for it. We've seen some circumstantial evidence, but to be completely fair, we don't have hard evidence. But how do you think those things gain traction? Because we see them. They justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. When you see these people who observably follow this pattern, then when somebody comes along and says they're secret pedophiles holding satanic rituals, people tend to sit around and go, yeah, that's believable. That's believable. I can see them doing that. Yeah, that makes sense. You see, if they were truly righteous people and walked in righteousness and proclaimed righteousness and spoke truth instead of lies, then somebody coming along and saying that person does that thing, they'd be like, yeah, no, I don't really believe that. They don't seem like that kind of person. But when they are observably doing these other things, yeah, you know, those conspiracy theories, as it were, they're going to get a little more traction. Let's wrap this up. Therefore, as the fire devoureth the stubble and the flame consumeth the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, and their blossom shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts, and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. They despise the word of God. They mock us, don't they? They mock the Christian believer. They mock those who walk in faith. They have, as we've already covered here, taken away the righteousness of the righteous from him. They have taken righteous people and done all they can to ruin them. And what? They exalt the wicked for a reward. They take a bribe. They take the wicked, get a reward. The righteousness get slandered. The righteousness get drugged through the court system. The corrupt court system. The righteous lose their jobs. The righteous get slandered with no recourse. The wicked, they get a reward. Nothing new, folks. This is the same old thing, same old pattern. It's carried out on a grander scale, true, but it's the same pattern. And they hate the word of God, and they hate those who walk in the way of the Lord. And in their arrogance, they say nothing will happen. It's like they're daring God to do something, aren't they? It's like they're daring God to drop his judgment on them because they don't think it'll happen. They're different. Things are different now. This cycle, it goes over and over. And when God drops a hammer on them, on the nation, and hell opens up and starts sucking these assholes in, you know, then all of a sudden they will know. Whenever it's quoted, you know, that every knee shall bow and confess the Lord. You know, that doesn't mean believer. It's literally everyone. You see, those that are going into hell, they're going to have to admit it then. When the hell opens it up and sucks them all in, they're going to know. They're going to know then. Then where will their arrogance be? Where will their vast amount of hubris take them then? I find it amazing. I really do. Because even if you, I was just sitting here thinking, even if you were a non-believer, And you just simply read the book of Isaiah here as a historical document. You didn't say, well, I don't believe in any of this God stuff, I for whatever reason. But you do look at this as like a historical document. And it is, by the way. You would sit here and you would be, I don't know how you would not see the patterns here. And you go, hey, you would still say, well, hey, it looks to me like societies in decay and decline tend to follow a certain pattern. Let's take a look at the checklist. Oppress the poor. Yes. Persecute the righteous. Oh, yeah. Exalt the wicked and reward them. Yes. Take bribes. Oh, there it is. Cheat the poor. Steal people's land. I mean, just go down the checklist. Even as a non-believer, you should be able to look at this and go, wow, it's a historical account. This pattern's starting to kind of rhyme. It looks like a pattern, and let's see what happens later. Oh, the whole society falls apart and it becomes hell on earth. Wow, you know. And of course, we know what's coming next in one form or another. It's difficult because we're stuck in the car with these people. I never pray that God doesn't judge America. God's judgment is set against America and against many other nations in the West. It's coming. It's not inevitable. And I'm not going to pray against what God is going to do, because your prayer ain't going to get answered. His will is greater than yours. I do pray for his people. I do pray that, you know, he will put a hedge of protection around his people, that he will deliver them through this, because the judgment is coming. There is no point in praying against it. All the check boxes are filled out. All the steps have been taken. This is where we're at. You would be remiss to find a single thing in the Old Testament accounts of what brings judgment about for a nation. You would be remiss to find a single thing that has not been checked off the list. They've done it all. Now we know what comes next. This is just cause and effect. As a Christian, you have to understand, this is cause and effect. If you do these things, this is going to be the result. It's spelled out, plain as day. You don't have to sit here and try to interpret, or what does this mean? It's spelled out. I am not a religious scholar here. I can sit here and read this and go, huh. So it's telling us, if you do A, B, C, and D, this is what's going to happen. If you sit here and pile up a bunch of dry weeds and brush and pour, then step two, pour gasoline on it. Then step three, strike a match. Shit's going to burn. You're going to be shocked when that happens. It's just simply spelled out. Like I said, I'm not claiming to be some. And so there are people, I'm sure, much more. I know there's people much more well studied in these things than I am. I have a very humble opinion of myself, believe me. But yeah, I can sit here and read it. Oh, well, this is pretty simple, because I can follow instructions. I'm the type of person, if you hand me something and give me enough time, I can figure out how it works. And if there's something wrong with it, once I figure out how it works, I'll figure out how to fix it more times than not. Just that type of person. So it's easy for me to read here and go, so I see how this works. If you do these things, if as a society you check off these boxes, this is what happens. That's how it works. This is how it functions. This is the system. You do these things, this is the result. Well, our society has done this thing, and we're starting to see the results. Or when's it coming? Look around you. It's crumbling. It's coming apart. It's just getting started. This show is just getting rolling, folks. Hell is opening up. It's going to suck them all in. They think their wealth is going to protect them. They think they've got all of this power. Now they've checked off all of the boxes, and they are literally daring God to do something. As we see it, yes, God will be glorified. But he will be glorified not just for those who believe. You see, it'll be undeniable for everybody. The vanquished will know it as well. We got to wrap up on that note. As usual, ran a little long, but hey, this is less running a little long than what we normally do. And what happens is, you know, like 30 minutes into the show, I should just stop and then get in the Christian specific message. And then the show would be an actual hour long show. Like it's believe it or not, supposed to be. But I always think to myself, well, this week's Christian message ain't going to take that long, so I'll run it up to about 40 minutes into the show. Then we'll get into that. It'll be about an hour long. It never works. It absolutely never works. If I had stopped it, that would be right at an hour now, but I ran, you know, anyway. Well, hopefully you got something out of it. I'm glad you stopped by. I always enjoy the discussions with y'all. We get to congregate together here at the Parish of the Patriots. I'm always glad to get together with y'all here. And again, thank you very much of those of you who pay your tithes. It is very much appreciated. It does help me out a whole bunch. And moral support as well as financial support. And again, if you want to be a part of that, information's at the bottom of the page. Highly encourage you to do so. Not like I'm asking you to bankrupt yourself in so doing. We'll wrap up on that note. And stay safe, stay sane. We'll see you next week right here at the Parish of the Patriots.